A new plan for downtown Jacksonville and the Shipyards development. Dismal, that's the word for the status of women in Florida. And the latest on the investigation into the doomed Alfaro ship. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and our WJCT app. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. Get on the line now. This is our second to the last roundtable of the year, the penultimate roundtable of 2016. So don't miss your chance to connect with the panel at 549-2937. Then later, it's a Congaree Christmas. We'll tell you about this weekend's free event at the Congaree and Penn Farm, plus the music of local indie favorites. Folk is people. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday. Time to look at the top stories of the week as we welcome Sebastian Kitchen of the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Claire Goforth, she's editor at Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
Our own analyst, John Burr in studio.
Good morning.
And WJCT reporter, Ryan Bank.
Good morning.
So good to have you all. Lots to discuss this Friday, from the latest on the Alfaro investigation to a dismal new report on the status of women in Florida. All that ahead, but our top story, some movement this week on the long-stalled Shipyards development on Jacksonville's downtown North Bank. The Downtown Investment Authority Board voted Wednesday to seek proposals from developers interested in developing this property. Now, this is the latest in a very long line of attempts to improve the empty and, let's face it, bleak stretch of city-owned waterfront. The DIA is asking for proposals for both the Shipyards and next-door neighbor Metropolitan Park, which, by the way, sits right next to WJCT. This is 70 acres of land. We want to know, here's our question to callers, what do you think should be done to develop the Shipyards and the Metropolitan Park property on the North Bank? Give us a call, 549-2937, that's 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, weigh in on our Facebook page. John Burr, let's begin with you. As the former editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal and a former editor at the Florida Times Union, this goes all the way back to 2001 when we first started seeing proposals to develop the Shipyards. In fact, our own First Coast Connect producer, Kevin Mershart, still has a souvenir from the very initial groundbreaking in 2001. He dug it out of his stuff in his office. It's a glass that is branded the Shipyards. This thing is 15 years old.
Yeah,
so what
looks
do you think
it
of,
too.
I know. So what do you think about
the Shipyards?
What do you think about this latest proposal?
Well, I wish it all the luck in the world. I mean, I would love to see, and I think most people in Jacksonville would love to see that developed. That, you know, it seems like it's got legs. Obviously, Shad Khan's involvement is a huge plus. But also the mayor seems to really have taken a personal stake in making this work. So you've got some real push there. Actually, Melissa, it's the fifth time.
Is it the fifth?
In 1995, the first development proposal came up, and that went bankrupt 2 years later. But yes, it's actually the fifth time they've tried to develop the Shipyards since it closed as a Shipyards in 1992.
And Claire Goforth, what we're hearing now, the latest out of the Jaguars organization, is that they want to take the Metropolitan Park space, tear down that bandshell, and put hotels and development there so that people can walk directly across the street from their hotel room to the football game. What they might do with the Shipyards property, who can say?
Yeah, who can say? But what we certainly know is that it's going to cost a lot of money to clean it up. I mean, the city commissioned an environmental study that found that it was contaminated beyond acceptable levels. Lead and arsenic are down there, and we don't even know what that's going to cost. I mean, in 2015, they found that even soil that had been placed over the cap was contaminated, which they had not expected. So we're going to be looking at a lot of money the city's probably going to have to fork out, because we know historically our experience with the Jaguars is that when they want something, we pay. So when we're looking at so many other issues facing the city, infrastructure, poverty, homelessness, is this the kind of spending we want to do? I mean, I agree that the development would be nice, and something does need to be done to improve the downtown waterfront, but is putting all of this space there and the possible runoff into the river from all of that grass that'll be on a park that's used regularly, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of factors at play, but bottom line, Shad Khan kind of seems to get what he wants, and Lenny Curry right now does seem to have all in on this game.
It's 549-2937 to join us. Mayor Lenny Curry saying he wants also Sebastian to take down the ramps that come off the Hart Bridge and that sort of pass overhead, past the stadium, past WJCT, past First Coast News, and go into and past the Maxwell House Coffee Plant and go into downtown Jacksonville as a way to further move along proposed development in this area.
Right, and I believe he's asking the state for $50 million to do that. And with all this current state budget situation, and it's not building infrastructure, it's rerouting infrastructure. So it'd be interesting to see how much help he gets from the state capitol with that. So it's a pretty big ask, especially with all the other demands. So we'll see where that goes. It's hard to argue. You were talking about the stretch here. Close, you know, as I drive from the other side of downtown here, you have an abandoned high-rise, you have the jail, you have the police department, which is not the most aesthetic building, you have the shipyards, which is just dead grass, then you have the park, which, the coffee, you know, a lot plant. Of time.
You go by Maxwell House, yeah.
So it's just, there's a long stretch there between downtown and the stadium where there's just not, something needs to be done, and I think Claire's right. I think if the mayor and Shad Khan want it bad enough, that there will probably be some effort to move development in that direction.
And it's only been decades in the making. Ryan Bank, we pulled a piece that was written in 2001. By the way, this ran in the Jacksonville Business Journal, reporting that the shipyard's property, which, of course, was an actual shipyards, particularly during World War II. It thrived for more than 100 years. It closed in 1992 and has sat vacant ever since, despite repeated attempts to develop it and do something with it, just full of unrealized potential.
So it closed in 92. I was about 3 years old.
Thanks for reminding all of us that we're so much older than you.
But from what I can see about, from what I've read and the people that I've talked to, it does look like this is a really big money issue. I mean, you have $35 million that you're going to need to clean up the shipyards. You have $50 million that the mayor wants for the on-ramps and the Hart Bridge. Then you also have to replace Met Park, because if you develop Met Park according to the deal that they've struck with the state and federal government, you have to replace Met Park. There has to be some other type of green passive park that is used. So, I mean, there's no telling what the final price tag on something like this is actually going to be and how that will be split up. How much is going to come from city government? How much is going to come from the state government? How much is going to come from Shad Khan? And, you know, how much is going to come from the federal government? We have a president who is incoming who has promised a lot of infrastructure spending, who has a better relationship with Tallahassee than the current president. So it could be possible that they get the money that they're looking for, but I mean, it's just really too early to tell.
Maybe we'll see Trump Tower on the riverfront.
the real wild card in all that is the environmental cleanup, because $35 million is just a guess. And I think the city has about $13 million.
And so, those projects have a way of mushrooming and ballooning.
They do,
in terms
because
of
you
cost.
Don't until you get down in there and
That's
really
right.
see what's there. You don't know, so it's a guess, and it could be a lot more than that. And in fact, you know, when city officials talk about the environmental cleanup, they don't. They kind of talk like, you know,
you just sounded like Charlie Brown's teacher there for a minute.
They just don't want.
What were you saying there?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's what stalled the environmental. From my understanding, is what stalled the last time that the downtown, the DIA decided to select Shad Khan's development company to do the previous last year to do the previous development. And it stalled. And I think, from what I remember reading, that the disagreement there was over the environmental. The city had the $13 million set aside, and it never moved forward because the city only wanted to pick up so much. He didn't want to pay for it. And so it kind of stalled, which shows you how much concern there is on both sides about how expensive that environmental cleanup could be.
Let's go to your calls now. If you're just tuning in, it's the top stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable, the penultimate Friday Roundtable of 2016. By the way, someone just tweeted the show. Is it really a roundtable? Not exactly.
It's kind of egg-shaped.
It's more oval-shaped.
Maybe Pentagon-ish.
Yeah, it's got a shape all its own, Twitter. I know you're curious about that and about our roundtable. They are objects of total fascination because the lines are jammed for you guys. 549-2937. Mark is on the west side. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Yeah, this really worries me. I kind of like it when the shipyard plan was just somebody's dream and it wasn't being realized. But you're absolutely right. That that environmental cleanup, $35 million, is a guess. It's a bad guess. It's going to end up going $50, $60, $100 million probably easily. And you know, it just worries me that Shad Khan or anybody who happens to own the Jaguars with deep pockets, you know, waves his hand and this is what I want, and taxpayers and citizens be damned, that he's going to get it, I'm sure. But I would love to see placing the USS Adams in that spot and open access for the citizens of Jacksonville and boat ramps and things like that. They keep saying that there will be citizen access to the river, but when it comes right down to it, there won't be. But I'm really worried about it. I know I'm going to end up paying for it.
You know, Mark, I think you're not alone. I think Mark expressed the views of a lot of Jacksonvillians, although he did also mention one other potential new attraction to the North Bank, the USS Adams, the warship that a group is trying to turn into a museum that would ostensibly, you know, it'd be part of this shipyard's development. We're waiting to see how that would factor in. But what about his comments?
Well, he's right. But you know what? Here's the deal. If you want that land to be anything other than what it is right now, which is totally unused and unproductive, you're going to have to clean it up. And that means if it's a park, if it's Shad Khan's condo development, whatever you want to do with it, you're going to have to clean it up. So, you know, we can worry about it and all that, but it's going to have to happen.
Well, and I think what some city officials might be hoping is that they're going to get actually more money from 2014's Amendment 1, from the conservation money. We have Councilman Matt Schellenberg filing not so much a bill as it is kind of like a proclamation to the state government, asking, you know, them to distribute the money that they have in Tallahassee a little bit more fairly. You know, a lot of that money is going to Everglades restoration. It's going to Indian River Lagoon. It's going to Lake Okeechobee. And they're hoping that, you know, they can convince Tallahassee now that they have two representatives or two senators on a very powerful appropriations committee to send some more of that conservation money to Northeast Florida. And if they can, then perhaps they can use it for something like a project like the shipyards.
And Chris tweets the show, the thought of losing Metropolitan Park is disheartening. They've already started tearing it down next door to us, dismantling that structure. Let's go to Michelle at the beaches. Hi, Michelle. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks. Go ahead.
I think this is a really interesting discussion. I realize it's a tough nut to crack, anything downtown. But I was thinking, you know, to bring people in on a more consistent basis, looking at something like working with businesses, there's a Top Golf that's on the south side. And I thought that would be pretty cool to build something like that on the river. Because it would emphasize, you know, the beauty of the river downtown, and it would also bring people to downtown, you know, and versus having a hotel and building another hotel that might sit empty for, you know, 50% of the time. So maybe working with businesses to bring something that's, you know, entertaining that people would actually want to, you know, visit, because right now in Southside, I know that place is just booked solid.
Yeah, so Michelle, thank
you. More in retail.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of mixed-use development may be beneficial. I mean, when politicians hear hotels, I think in their brains a light goes on, bed tax, you know.
By the way, we're getting tweets about that. Now that the con deal is dead, can we use the bed tax money to fix the stage and upgrade Metropolitan Park? It doesn't seem that there's any sentiment among the powers that be.
There is no bed tax money. It went to Daly's, you know.
It went to the other side of
Bay
Street.
That's right.
Yeah. Philip Milano is on the line, former reporter at the Florida Times Union, now at Jacksonville University. Hey Philip.
How are you? Hey, I just, one thing everyone needs to know is that table is gold plated. I've been in that studio.
That's right.
I was thinking, you know, when I got here in 87, there was a big proposal for somewhere in that section of land. I think it was called Renaissance Place, but it might have been where the big hotel is there now. But, you know, regarding the shipyards, I'll believe it when I see it. But with Con behind something like that, you know, a lot of the major stuff that's happened in Jacksonville in recent years usually have to have some sort of a charismatic major sort of individual behind it. You know, the district with Peter Rummel, this thing with Con, even going back to the Jaguars with Jake Godbold. As John was saying, something like this could have legs because it might have a major figure behind it who's really seems to be invested in town. So,
thanks, Philip.
A major figure who's a billionaire, you know.
Lowell is in. Yeah, let's go to Lowell in Mandarin. Hi, Lowell. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. We're talking about all this redevelopment downtown. Oh, we've got a huge building, half built, standing there like a skeleton. What is it, Berkman Plaza or something?
Yeah, also known as the Beirut Berkman, unfortunately, because it doesn't look so nice. Yeah, but go ahead, Lowell.
And then why in the world do we want to drop the transit from overhead down into street level, just messing things up again? Extend it to the stadium, get people parking on the other side of the river and using the transit that's there. Anyway, good luck with downtown. Love to visit. Construction's keeping me away.
Really? Construction's keeping you away? What construction?
Well, all the highways. Try to ride your bike into town. Try to transit into town around I-95. It's brutal. It's street level. They just driven that 95 corridor through town so badly that down below, you know, Riverside, down there around San Jose or San Marco, it's just brutal getting into town now. So,
okay, well, anyway. Thanks for the call, Lowell.
Yeah, that I-95 project is actually, they are doing commendable work on that. That is one of the most complicated construction projects that we have seen in Northeast Florida, honestly, in the roads. I know that one of the areas, they had no more than, I want to say it was a meter to put the road in where it was not going to be too close to a parking garage because of the vibration, and have managed to do that. I mean, all of the utilities that they've had to move, it has been a huge undertaking. And honestly, FDOT is doing a really good job there. I know it doesn't look like it, and I know that it's very frustrating for people trying to navigate that interchange, but that is an enormous project.
Yeah, lots of calls, but we're going to move on and talk about a few other headlines from the week. You can be part of the roundtable at 549-2937. Now, also making headlines this week, a new report says Florida has a dismal ranking when it comes to the status of women. Florida ranked 47th out of 50 states, according to the Florida Women's Funding Alliance, with higher rates of poverty, lower rates of higher education, and less access to health insurance coverage here in the Sunshine State than U.S. women overall. Very bad news, not surprising news. We've been at this ranking for some time, but still not. We now are reminded once again that we've got a lot of work to do.
None of the guys want to sound off on this one?
I will, and you can too, Claire.
We can all talk about it. This affects people generally.
Sure.
One of the things that I noticed was very interesting about that study is if you look at the states where the ranking for women is the lowest, they do tend to have very strong Republican political makeups, and states where the ranking for women is higher tend to have more Democratic political makeup. I'm not sure if that is a cart before the horse argument. Maybe it's cultural. Maybe it does have something to do with the policies enacted by different representatives from the parties. But, you know, it's definitely worth noting that states like Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, who are very red, tend to have lower rankings for women, and states like California and Vermont and D.C., well, D.C. is not a state, but that are very blue have higher rankings.
But I would not argue that Florida is quite as red as Alabama and Mississippi, and I would imagine a lot of people in the state would not. A Democrat can still get elected statewide here, but it does. I think it is notable that Florida has been at 47 for a while, and I think a lot of people would find that surprising given some of the states you just listed. And some of the states that are actually ahead of Florida, I think, you know, is not something for Florida to be proud of at all. One thing that stuck out to me in the report is that some of the things that were recommended for Florida to do with the current state administration, state legislature, and the incoming White House administration, I would not expect that to change. Increase the minimum wage, approve paid leave legislation, reconsider the decision to not to expand Medicaid, expand public health programs, and there's some other about higher education opportunities and other things. And I don't foresee any of that changing in the near future.
No political will to move on any of those
issues.
No,
especially after the election. I mean, I think one of the issues that I cover a lot is healthcare and looking at this. I mean, how, you know, there's been plenty of studies out there that show that Florida ranks as low as 38 or 40 out of the 50 states for healthcare, and a lot of that has to do with access and coverage. We have a particularly bad doctor shortage. When you start talking about specialists, that narrows down even more. And the coverage that we have here is just it's lackluster, and that is despite the fact that we're one of the states that that signs up the most patients on the federal exchange for healthcare.
Apparently, there's been a record number of signups this year, and in particular in Florida in the last few months.
Right,
as people try to get the coverage, they may see some changes to that coverage in the next year or two.
Well, even if it stayed completely the same, we still have this huge coverage gap in Florida because there's a massive gap of people that don't qualify for Medicaid at you know how it is set up currently, and yet still can't afford to purchase insurance even with the tax subsidies on the exchanges. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the incoming administration will do to reform healthcare. I mean, I guess that's one of the biggest open questions that we have for policy moving forward. But I can see how women specifically can be very affected by this lack of coverage.
And if you're just tuning in, it's our biggest stories of the week at 549-2937. Now, give us a call about this story, because we also learned more this week about how the doomed Alfaro ship went down. A transcript of audio released Tuesday by the National Transportation Safety Board showed at least two top crew members urged Alfaro Captain Michael Davidson to alter his course as a powerful hurricane approached. It was Hurricane Joaquin. But Davidson had them maintain the vessel's course in the final hours before he and his shipmates were overtaken by the storm. Ryan Bank and Sebastian Kitchen, I think you both covered this NTSB hearing, or you've been covering the hearings and this latest piece of information. As we listen to this audio transcript, what are your impressions of what we're learning?
Well, they didn't release the audio. The NTSB is not allowed.
The transcript.
They did release the transcript.
Yeah.
It's a more than 500-page transcript, which is the longest that the NTSB has ever done. It is. They had 26 hours of audio, 10 that they considered relevant. And I will say that reading the transcript in general, but reading the last few pages of the transcript is one of the few things I've ever read, especially recently, where my heart literally pounded every single time I read it. It's one of the most moving pieces of fiction or nonfiction I've read. It's incredibly tragic and sad, and to think that it would be a great movie script, literally, if you weren't thinking that was the last minutes of 33 people's lives. I've never read anything quite like it. There was a crew member begging the captain to help him, asking for a ladder, asking for a line. The captain didn't have it. So it was really moving. And so it'll be interesting to see how this factors into the current investigations by the NTSB and the U.S. Coast Guard. The U.S. Coast Guard has held two-week hearings here, and they'll have another one early this next year. And it'll be interesting to see what conclusions that the investigators are able to make from this most recent information.
Now, the Alfaro left Jacksonville on October 1st on its way to San Juan, Puerto Rico, went right into the mouth of Joaquin. All 33 crew members, most lived in this area, went to their deaths. Ryan Bank, we just don't know for sure what led to the captain's decision, but it has been theorized that he might have felt under pressure by the company to keep moving ahead despite the rough weather.
Well, that was at least kind of one vein of thought during these really, really long all-day hearings. You know, the idea, the fact of the matter is that we know that he had the ultimate decision-making power, and that was what the company Tote Maritime sort of argued during the Coast Guard hearings, that the decision to change course is ultimately left up to the captain. And as we see from the transcripts, he refused to change course. I believe he was told by his second and his third mate that they recommended a change of course, and he did not change course. We don't know exactly. We can only speculate as to why that was the case. Some have said that what came out during the hearings was that he was afraid that he wouldn't keep his job, and that he wouldn't keep he wouldn't be a captain of a new line of ships that they were considering him for. He also had a couple strikes against him for some interpersonal conflicts that his crew had in the past. So at the same time, there was a discussion about maybe some type of monetary bonuses that could have been handed out at least to the people at port in Puerto Rico for delivering goods on time. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know exactly how this transcript is going to feed into the next hearing, but it definitely seems to kind of bolster Tote's case that at the end of the day, it was the captain's decision.
Well, you know, think about it. What other reason could there be for him to disregard that advice to alter the course of the ship? I mean, he must have felt some pressure from his employer to get to San Juan on time with that cargo. There's, you know, really, what other reason could he possibly have to just plow through and try to make it on time?
He did talk about, in the transcript, he talks repeatedly. He did alter course, to be clear. When they, a couple times leading up to it, they did alter course. And Davidson talks about repeatedly on there, and his crew talks about how they thought they would be south of the storm. And the second mate talks about every time we make an adjustment, it just follows us. And they seem to be, you can tell from the crew, the second, third mate, and some of the helmsmen were there, that they grew increasingly worried about that situation. There's one situation where Davidson is talking about the speed and getting there, and the second mate, Danielle Randolph, says, I don't, you know, I'm not too worried about the time. I want to get there in one piece. And that was 12 hours before or more before that ever happened. So some of the crew members were incredibly concerned well before they gave them those two warnings to change the route.
Those were in the final moments, essentially, or it was the night before and the morning of, correct? Right?
Well, there was ones even well before that. There was one where he got a call at 11 p.m., from the third mate who asked him to adjust, and even told him that at 4 o'clock in the morning we would be within 22 miles of the hurricane, and they maintained the route. And then, but this one was hours even before that. So there were warnings that they were concerned even hours before those two calls that Melissa first referenced.
And not only was the hurricane moving south, which wasn't really expected, it was also getting a lot stronger.
Yeah.
at the same time, it went from a 3 to a 4, I believe.
Well, Sebastian, Ryan, thanks to both of you for all your great reporting on this story as it's unfolded over a period of months. And finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state, including a really interesting local story. Luckily, we never have a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. And only in Florida does a fake dentist extract people's teeth without anesthetic. Yes, authorities in Bradenton say 53-year-old Robbie Rhinelander faces charges after he extracted 10 teeth without any pain relief, even made dentures during house calls. A couple told a Manatee County Sheriff's detective that Rhinelander extracted the woman's tooth, leaving a tooth fragment. They got suspicious and looked up Rhinelander only to find that he wasn't a dentist. He was arrested after an undercover cop arranged to meet him for some dental work. Ouch. Only in Florida do robbers put buckets over their heads to avoid being seen by the surveillance cameras. This thief hit up a pet store, and he even used a garbage bag to disguise his identity as he gathered pricey pigeons and tools from the El Viejo Lazaro Botanica in Miami. The owner of the store is hoping that surveillance video of the robber's antics will help police find him. He took 40 racing pigeons valued up to $1,000.
I didn't know you could buy racing pigeons at the pet store.
I know.
I had no idea there was such a thing as racing pigeons.
Neither did I.
Where do you race a pigeon?
I know. This is why we call this only in Florida.
Getting on Google right now.
And finally, only in Florida does the state capitol feature a secular display to celebrate the holidays. Now, we've all heard of the infamous Festivus pole at the capitol, right? And all the holiday displays in Tallahassee. Well, now, the First Coast Free Thought Society of Jacksonville is getting in on the act. They have displayed a secular, scientifically and historically accurate exhibit at the State House that explains what they call the true reason for the season, the winter solstice. The Free Thought Society is sharing this coveted spot in the Capitol Rotunda with two other groups. The display talks all about the winter solstice with three separate panels. You can check it out through December 22nd.
It's the most wonderful time of the year at the Capitol. It really is. The fact that they have to allow all of these displays, it's great.
The midnight nude dancing is optional.
Well, thank you, Claire Goforth, Ryan Banks, Sebastian Kitchen, and John Burr. Thank you so much for being with us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you,
you too.
Thank
Merry winter solstice.
More to come on the show, but right now, here's how you can support WJCT.
Give us a call right now, and thank you, 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528. Or you can go online to wjct.org. Hi there, I'm Kevin Mersharp, producer for First Coast Connect. We are in the final day of our little three-day end-of-year fun drive, trying to make up a little loss that we had earlier in the year in drives. And we need to raise $40,000. We're over the $20,000 mark, so we're still $20,000 to go. Now, we can do that in one day. We've done that before. You have done that before. You have made that happen. Make the call right now. Show your support for all the programs you enjoy, including First Coast Connect. I know the Roundtable is very popular out there. I will run into people when I'm out and about in town, and people will recognize me and say how much they enjoy First Coast Connect, how much they enjoy the guests we bring in, and how much they love the news that comes on every day to you. It's only made possible because of listeners just like you. So make that call right now at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528 or go online to wjct.org. And remember, for a $120 one-time gift or become a sustainer at $10 a month, and we will send you our wonderful stainless steel water bottle thank you gift of WJCT. It's blue colored. It looks really nice and it works great. It doesn't have that metallic taste sometimes water bottles have. Been told that doesn't occur with this, so it's a special kind of bottle. Make that call now at 353-9528. And don't forget, for $80, you could also get the Hamilton Mix CD if you are a big fan of that play, or maybe you've at least heard about it and are interested in hearing some of the music from that. Then this is what that CD it provides. It has many great artists, not the original cast or something like that, but other artists doing some of the great songs from that play. Call it now, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org. Every day we bring you great programming, but it is expensive to bring you great programming. Programs like Diane Rehm coming up in about 20 minutes. We only have a few episodes of Diane Rehm left until she retires. And then 1A comes on with Joshua Jack coming up in January, and that's really exciting too. I know you're all looking forward to that. It's all made possible because of you. So make the call now, and thank you very much for your support. The number again is 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528, or you can go online at wjct.org, and thank you for supporting your public radio station.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
North Florida TPO, proud sponsor of WJCT's First Coast Connect, bringing to the community innovation in transportation planning, commuter services, clean fuels, and intelligent transportation systems. More at NorthFloridaTPO.com.
I'm Ira Plato. On the next Science Friday, in the past 2 years, more than half a dozen prominent male scientists have made headlines for repeatedly harassing female students, research assistants, and colleagues. We take a look at what empowered them to do so. and what reforms might make a difference, plus the continued inequalities in women's access to fellowships, funding, and research citations. All on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, here is a great idea for your weekend. Christmas at Congaree. With more than 24 small businesses, hayrides, Santa Claus, and more, the flourishing local farm Congaree and Penn is opening their gates for a free holiday event. Owner Scott Meyer joins us now with a preview of the first ever Christmas at Congaree. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Thanks for being here. This sounds like so much fun, and this is your first ever attempt at this. What all is going to be happening?
Yeah, so we're going to have a bunch of great local vendors like Shy and Charlotte from All of My Pickle, the ladies from Bold City Pops, you know, Vagabond Coffee. The list goes on and on. We'll also have out Chef Ryan Randolph doing some small plates from Kitchen on San Marco. There's going to be two teams of horses from my neighbor to the north at Jacksonville Carriage Company offering hayrides. And it's just going to be a lot of fun for kids and the whole family.
And this is free, by the way.
That's right. So we've previously had some ticketed farm dinners and other great events, but we've always wanted to try to be open to the public. But to do that all the time, we're always busy working on the farm. And so we figured what a better time to have out the Jacksonville community than right before Christmas. So Sunday, it's free, open to the public. Come on out.
People can come and see a really interesting working farm operation that's not too far from the city.
That's right.
What all's on your property?
Yeah, so we began in 2014 growing rice, and then we've continued expanding into the mayhaw, which is a native crabapple tree we're growing. We now have 1,500 of them in the ground, so they'll be seeing a lot of young mayhaw trees. We'll also have our muscadine grapevines that are going into dormancy now. And then later this year, we'll be planting some strawberries and blackberries.
Did you grow up farming?
I grew up, my father, Jeff, had the big tree company, so I was working at the greenhouse and doing some things with the nursery trees, but those were for landscaping. But now we're growing fruit trees, rice, and we actually do some food processing and fruit and rice manufacturing on the farm.
What drew you to this? You know, my grandparents were farmers. My uncle and aunt, they farm the land now in downstate Illinois. It used to be, we used to be such an agrarian society.
Sure.
But that the number of people doing what you do has really gotten smaller. But people that do it have a passion for it, and there's such a demand for it. What drew you to this kind of work?
Well, I'd always say that I've always wanted to work outside, and so that was kind of one of the driving forces. And then I also love food. I love going out and eating. I love cooking at home. And so being able to kind of combine those two things, and also, you know, a passion to try to educate the public as to where their food comes from. So those are kind of the factors that drive me to want to be a producer.
And for a lot of kids, this might be their first chance to go visit a working farm. So many children really don't have the opportunity to see this in person.
Sure.
This
and
really
I think that's
exciting
really
for
exciting.
Them.
Yeah, we've had a couple homeschool tours, but we always love having kids out to the farm and showing them where rice comes from. And, you know, we also have some chickens and guinea fowl and an old turkey now.
Oh, really? Got an old turkey walking around.
Yeah, she just...
And she survived Thanksgiving.
Yeah, she survived Thanksgiving. We adopted her last week. She was living somewhere in a backyard in Springfield, and now she's out on the farm.
Very nice. Now, Congaree and Penn, people need to know how to get to you. The website is Congaree. And by the way, who were Congaree and Penn?
Well, the Congaree was the name of a sailboat my grandfather captained in World War II.
Oh.
And then Penn is from my mom's middle maiden name, Ann Pennington.
Okay.
And so that's how that came about. They're all the Louisiana side of my family, which there's still a few cousins and whatnot growing rice over there.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of drew from that. But to find us, we're in Northwest Jacksonville on Old Kings Road, just north of Plummer Road. However, there's a bridge out currently after Hurricane Matthew, so you'll need to go on US 1 and then just take a left at the Densmore Work Release Center sign. There'll also be bright orange detour signs that Jacksonville's put up to tell you to get back on Old Kings Road.
It's a Congaree Christmas this Sunday. Gates open at?
At noon.
Noon.
And we'll be out there all the way till 4 o'clock with all sorts of great vendors and horses and Eileen the turkey and all sorts of good things. Santa Claus will even be there.
It's going to be so much fun. And by the way, this is free. So if you're looking for something fun to do with your family Sunday, check out Christmas at Congaree Sunday from noon to 4. He is Scott Meyer, the owner of the farm. And thanks for coming in and telling us about it.
Well, thanks so much for having me. And I'm looking forward to having everyone out to the farm on Sunday.
Back in a moment with the music of singer-songwriter Stacey Bennett and Folk is People. Keep listening.
PBS Kids is growing bigger and better than ever because now kids can watch more of their favorite shows anytime you want on the new 24/7 PBS Kids channel, after school or after dinner, even on weekends. Now there's even more PBS Kids to love all day long on the new 24/7 PBS Kids channel, coming January 16th to WJZT Channel 7.5. Comcast subscribers, call 1-800-XFINITY and ask for the new PBS Kids channel on the First Coast.
Hi, I'm Vince Kong, host of Redux, WJCT's weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. Tune in to catch up on the latest local stories, plus music from our after-hours programming, anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to WJCT Redux now on your favorite podcast app.
On the next Jazz Night in America, Eddie Palmieri and Harlem River Drive.
And my problem with Harlem River Drive is that I wanted a crossover. And you know who were my biggest fans? The anti-government movement, the Weathermen.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm Catherine Burns, one of the hosts of the Moth Radio Hour, and I hope you'll join us here on 89.9 WJCT. With true personal stories told live without notes to standing room crowds around the world, Moth stories aren't part of the disposable daily information flow. They stick with you, and you'll even find yourself retelling them. Listen Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, that's Jacksonville singer-songwriter Stacey Bennett on a career upswing with her indie band Folk is People and the new album The Devil Always Comes. You can see Folk is People and Stacey tomorrow at Riverside Arts Market, and there's another concert coming up at Jackrabbits. Stacey Bennett, good morning.
Hello, how are you?
Good to see you.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Excited to have you on, and you sound great. I love your music.
Thank you.
Yeah, tell me about the new album.
Well, it was a year and a half in the making. Each song is completely different from the other. I would say some of the songs were brand new, hot off the press. I wrote some of them in the studio, and some of them, I've started them 10 years ago, and I just finally put them together.
You have a unique sound that draws from independent rock, even a little folk. I mean, the name of this band is Folk is People.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I almost changed the name because people say, you know, don't put the genre of music in it, but it's more about that. Folk, to me, is a very inclusive word, and I feel like to say, well, folk is people, and I feel like I write my songs for everyone. I want everybody to experience the music and tie it into their own lives, so it's more about being inclusive than the actual genre folk.
Yeah, and going from covers to original music is always a big leap for a local artist trying to move up. What inspires your local, or what inspires your original songwriting?
Well, I write from a very vulnerable place, so just my personal experiences, the things I see, the surroundings around me. It's really interesting because I never realized until I was doing an interview for Antebellum magazine, and she said, how does living in the South influence your music? Because I'm originally from Northern Virginia area, and I said, you know what? Wow, it really does. You know, you pick up on those things.
So you grew up in Virginia, but live in Florida now.
Mm-hmm.
What brought you to Florida?
Well, I would say wanting a change. My whole family ended up moving to Florida. The housing prices were nice living on the coast. and just needing to get away. And it was, for me, it was always something that would be temporary, but it's now been 11 years. So
it happens a lot, but people kind of get stuck when they come down here, but kind of happily so.
Well, I couldn't believe it because, you know, I first lived at the beach and then I, you know, moved into the Riverside community, and it's just such a little niche. I love it.
And you'll be performing for that community tomorrow. Riverside Arts Market, Stacy Bennett, you'll be performing. Tell us what time you'll be on the stage.
I will be on the stage at 10:30 a.m. My drummer Bob and I will be performing. And then we have a show December 25th, which is Christmas, at Jackrabbits with...
I can't believe they're open on Christmas.
They are. This is actually my second time playing there on Christmas.
And they get a good turnout on Christmas night.
Believe it or not. I think everyone's pretty fed up with their families at that point.
I was just going to say, maybe people are really ready for an escape by 8 o'clock on Christmas night.
Yeah.
Or whatever time you get started.
Right. Because, you know, people usually are like staying over for the holidays. So,
yeah.
But I'm playing with Lands, Giella, and Tomboy. And it's a really cool show because it's kind of staggered pricing. So if... $15 if you're feeling generous, $10 is general admission, but we're also doing $5 if you donate 2 paperback books without explicit material, so it goes to the Books for Prison campaign.
Oh, very nice.
And 25% of the door money will also go to the Jacksonville Transgender Action Committee.
So when people have had Christmas dinner and their annoying uncle, they just can't take anymore, all they need to say is, I'm just going to go run out to the store.
Right.
But in reality, they're going to go see you at Jackrabbits.
Right, but bring your annoying uncle and lose him at the door.
He can go do something else.
We're DIY bands, you guys. We need everybody we can get.
She is singer-songwriter Stacy Bennett. It's Folk is People. The new album is The Devil Always Comes. See her at the Riverside Arts Market tomorrow. And on Christmas night at Jackrabbits, get your tickets for that. Do we have time to play a little bit more of her music? I know I'm taking Michelle by surprise by asking her that. Maybe we do, though. Anyway, have a great weekend. Have some great shows. Thanks so much for being with
Thank
us.
Thank you. And you guys can check me out at focuspeople.com or any social media site for the most part.
Excellent. We're going to listen to a little more of Stacy as we close the show. Thanks to our producer, Kevin Merschart. Board op Michelle Corum, and our theme composer Pyotr Chevchik of the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra. Diane Reams up next with a look at the week's top national news stories. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. Enjoy the music, and in a little bit, we also want you to give us a call.
And good morning, and thank you for all the support you have already given us here at WJCT and 89.9 during our end-of-the-year fun drive. My name's Kevin Merschart. I am the producer of First Coast Connect, and we're here to ask for your support for this show. If you enjoy First Coast Connect, I know a lot of people out there do, if you enjoy the roundtable, we enjoy it when we bring in local artists like that, give us a call and show your support. 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. Or go online at wjct.org. Every day we bring you great programs like this and Diane Ream coming up. And it costs money to bring you these programs. We need to raise $40,000 during this little three-day drive. And today's the last day, and we're a little over the $20,000 mark. So we do have a bit of ways to go. That kind of happens. So people sort of like to roll in at the end. Don't wait till this afternoon. Just do it now. You know, you want to call in and show your support. You might become a sustainer at $10 a month. You do that, or a $120 one-time gift, and we're going to send you our thank you gift of our stainless steel water bottle that you can take anywhere with you. Call now at 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or online at wjct.org. Also remember, for $80, you can get the great, for $80 one-time contribution, the Hamilton Mix CD with music from the award-winning play that's been such a huge hit on Broadway that I think at this point now, it's like you can't get tickets until around 2018. Give us a call, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org. We're trying to bring you all the great news. We bring you such great stuff this week. This week's First Coast Connect, we had some great conversations. The one yesterday on PolitiFact, the lie of the year, talking about fake news. We had a lot, big response on that. Come some phone calls, lots of response online about the fake news and what to do about things like that. You never hear worry about fake news here at WJCT because we always bring you the truth. We strive to make sure we bring you stories that are true, even to just reporting a story. And, well, let's make sure we got that right because it's more important for us to give you accurate information than getting it to you first. That's not our goal. Our goal is to always make sure the information is accurate before we go on the air with anything. 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org. If you enjoy all these programs, you enjoy the programs you hear on the weekends, like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, let us know. Give us a call. Show your support. Tell us, yes, this is one of these programs I love the most. I just can't handle my week without First Coast Connect. Give us a call at 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, online wjct.org. We bring you guests from all around the community here for First Coast Connect. We talk to people statewide and even nationally about issues that we think is very important to you. That's why we put this together every day. That's what we discuss, Melissa and I, and even other people in the newsroom. We get our heads together and say, what would be a good topic to talk about? What do you think would get people to call in and listen, at least, at the very least, sit there and listen? Not everybody calls. Most people don't call. Most people just want to listen to the program, and that's great. So give us a call right now. Show your support for WJCT and all the programs you enjoy here on 89.9. Diane Rehm is coming up in just a couple of seconds, so we're going to listen to a little more music and then go here, see Diane. Give us a call, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org, and thank you for supporting your public radio station.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.